Happy Wednesday, Cyclone Nation. Welcome to the latest installment of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. Today's, of course, brought to you by our good friends at Mr. B Clothing down at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. I welcome the Gray brothers, Rob and Adam Gray, no relation. They are going to co-host the podcast with me here today. Gentlemen, I'm watching it was Alabama and Ole Miss, and I'm watching all these lunatic Ole Miss fans climbing all over goalposts, and they're wearing khakis, and they're wearing sweater vests. They've got ties on. I like the classy look. I feel like we should do something with Mr. B Clothing down there in Clive, and we get Iowa State fans to be a little better dressed at football games. What do you think, Rob?
That's an interesting idea. I don't know. I
love how the SEC schools do that.
Yeah, but, I mean, how much – I guess in terms of winning, you'd like to be like Ole Miss, but, I mean, I'll stop right there. But
Adam, would you wear a tie to a game? You once wore a Santa costume to a game.
I once did, and we actually won that game. That was the
– which game was that?
It was Oklahoma State game, 2011.
Oh, yeah. Forgot
so
about that.
Christmas came early that day. But, no, I would not wear a tie. If I did wear a
doesn't
tie –
doesn't surprise me. You're not classy like that. I get it.
Yeah, I'd probably kick my own butt if I wore a tie to a football game. But.
So the point of having both of you here is, you know, I know you both very well. You guys are kind of getting to know each other. Do you know each other very well?
Yeah, I think so.
To a degree, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how this podcast
two guys, goes. Two guys here – excuse me, a little hot right there. Two guys here who could not see the world more differently. I mean, but I'm not going to get you in like a politics like fight or anything like that. Don't worry. But I think it will in a semi-controversial week in Iowa State athletics. I think it would be good to have both of your voices. You got the voice of the fan. You got the voice of the longtime print journalist, print journalist in Rob Gray.
Grizzled. I liked the grizzled. Yeah. He used to use
the grizzled senior writer of CycloneFanatic.com.
Yes. Yes.
So if we're polar opposites and you just said he's sophisticated, what does that make me? I just want to know.
Down home. You know,
there's nothing better than Adam's Twitter feed during Iowa State games. Do you ever watch it?
Oh, it's outstanding.
Oh, man, it's so funny. I love it.
I feel like I'm getting a little calmer. And then I go back and I read it and I say that I need to just put my phone away a couple times.
You actually have really chilled out over the course of the last year.
Yeah, I needed to, and I could still take it down a notch or two.
It's the caps lock off. Yeah. The caps lock is off.
It is. Depends on the call.
It's engaged when it needs to be.
Oh, good, clean fun. All right. I want to start off with a little – this isn't breaking news, but I think it's noteworthy, though. Iowa State opened as a 5 or 6, depending on where you caught it at, point favorite over Toledo on Saturday. That line now, gentlemen, is down to 2.5 in Ames. That means that Vegas sees this basically pretty much – even when it opened at 5, as a toss-up. As a toss-up with Toledo, who doesn't have their starting quarterback. They've got injuries across the board. That's I don't know if that's just like really good for gamblers who want a little inside information and are going to put the house on Iowa State. Or I don't know. Or that could be downright scary, too.
Yeah, I mean, as you guys know, Vegas usually knows something. They're on to something.
Like the TCU-Oklahoma game last week. Whoa, what's going on here? Well, they knew something.
Absolutely. And, I mean, all you have to do is look at, I suppose, Toledo's offense in particular and see how dangerous that can be when they're averaging almost 243 yards on the ground, 5.4 yards a carry or better. One of those guys, Kareem Hunt, is hurt. But, I mean, that's going to be a tough – I mean, that might be – the most formidable rushing attack that the Cyclones have faced to this point.
I just watched your video from last night with Wally Burnham. He didn't really compare them to Baylor, did he?
He was just screwing with us.
Yeah, but, come on.
Wally often gives us some interesting takes, and that's what we love him for. You know, he speaks his mind, but sometimes he throws something in there that's a serious curveball. It's got a little pine tar on it.
What way was he comparing them to Baylor, though?
I think
there were some specifics to this.
Going from memory, I thought it was more or less somewhat related to scheme as to how they're trying to spacing. Yeah, and then maybe some deceptive things that they might try to do with motions or this sort of thing. I don't think he was saying, but at the same time, he said, and Kareem Hunt, the guy who could be back, it's averaging 9 yards a carry or something like that, 8.9, 7 TDs already.
Well,
he could play for anybody. He would play for anybody. And
is he like the Northern Iowa kid?
David Johnson. Yeah, I mean,
that's what everybody always says about him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely comparable.
Gray, you were rolling your eyes a minute ago.
Well, you bring Baylor up into every conversation.
Well, it's
every podcast
they're amazing.
Anymore.
I didn't bring that up. Wally Burnham brought that up.
You brought up Wally Burnham bringing that up.
Well, I know. I just watched the video, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, that seems insane to me.
I mean, if
Baylor's the top-ranked offense in the country, is Toledo really comparable to Baylor? Toledo, they're 4-2. They're a MAC school.
I get it.
I mean, that's insane.
But if everything that the coaches said, you took the Baylor comment.
Yeah,
and it's disrespectful towards Baylor.
I feel like as a journalist, if I'm watching those videos, that is the number one thing that stuck out to me of all those videos, that Wally Burnham would compare that offense to Baylor. And I haven't seen Toledo, but to me, I mean, that's an alarming and it even Tommy Burch, I heard, replied, "Wow, that's scary." Clearly, that's the top comment from last night, I thought.
Rob, you were there last night. Was that the top comment that stuck out in your mind?
No, but nonetheless.
What was yours, Rob?
He's comparing them. Just let me finish. He's comparing them again in a very specific way. He's not saying this offense as a whole is as potent or more potent or comparable to Baylor.
So I'm taking him out of context.
I believe you are, yeah. But nonetheless, in terms of last night, one thing, they've talked about how much they're going to blitz this year based on the personnel that they have, and Wally put a number on it, and that might have been, you know, you record some of it video and you have your tape, you know, your digital recorder or otherwise. Said he thinks they blitzed 27 times against Oklahoma State. And
Iowa State did.
Yes. And
it was great to see.
Yeah, and it's been effective for them by and large, and it's totally a break with how they've usually done it. They've gone to playing a lot more man in coverage, really being aggressive as a defense front. And let's face it, zone and less of a pass rush has worked at times with the bend but don't break, but now they're trying to do some breaking of their own. And Coach Rhodes even said, when I asked him about that change, he'd actually like to see them blitz a little bit more. But one of the reasons, obviously, they haven't is facing a lot of power sort of running type teams, North Dakota State, Iowa, K-State early on.
But Toledo has a backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
They are a run-oriented and listen, folks, I'm far from a Toledo Rocket expert. But I would think, though, with the success they had blitzing last week, the scenario, this team coming into a Big 12, and I think Jack Trice, despite the 1-4 record, will be a great atmosphere, 2:30 kick, homecoming on Saturday. I think it's going to be a nice atmosphere there. Bring the house, man. Bring the house all day long, all day.
I think Iowa State should defend how other teams have been defending Iowa State. Bring everyone closer to the line of scrimmage and just say, hey, quarterback, beat us deep. Yep. And if you know what, if they beat us deep once or twice, they beat us deep. But make them make plays rather than playing 10, 11 yards off and giving a backup quarterback these underneath passes all day. I think they need to play closer to the line of scrimmage in this game.
Well, absolutely. And I see the confidence being gained. We knew Nigel Tribune had confidence based on how much he played and played effectively as a freshman last season. But Sam E. Richardson, you know, finally getting an interception. That was interesting.
Yeah, I really wish we didn't have the two Sam Richardsons. It's starting to get really annoying.
Yeah, it's just weird putting a, you know, unless middle initial in, unless it's what, Craig T. Nelson from Coach way back in the day or something.
From what? What are you talking about?
You didn't see that old
show? The sitcom?
It was on in the 40s, I think.
No, are you talking about the one with Hayden Fox?
Yeah.
The head coach, and it was based after, like,
Craig
the University
T. Nelson,
of Iowa, right?
He was in an old movie, Poltergeist, too.
Is that Luther, the defensive coordinator, who was just an imbecile?
Yeah, what's that?
Luther, is that who you're talking about?
Craig T. Nelson was the head coach.
So he was Hayden
Jerry
Fox. Jerry Van Dyke, that was Luther, yeah.
Showing my old man chops.
Then you had that imbecile special teams coordinator, too, the bald one.
Oh God!
The young one, the up and comer, but he was just an idiot.
Yeah, he was.
Who ran the offense?
He was the Wayne Bolt of that coaching staff.
First time I ever. I know I've told this story before, but I go in and interview Wayne Bolt. It's like the spring football they had gotten there, and I mean it took him like 5 minutes to get all of the chew out of his mouth before he could start the interview. He's just spitting everywhere, and I mean it was epic. But
I knew there was a reason I brought up Craig T. Nelson, and it was to get work Wayne Bolt into the conversation.
Yeah,
but
I feel like that coaching staff was very similar to the coaching staff and coach. Seriously,
it would be interesting to run a side by side. You know,
bunch of dudes hanging out in the office, you know.
It's probably on Netflix or something, Hulu, yeah. Crackle or something. You know, run a little sitcom next to it and then pull some old clips of that staff. And interesting. But I think, yeah, I was talking about the D-backs and their confidence level. And it seems to be getting higher, Sam, with that pick. And you could see in his face when he talked about it on Monday just how much it meant to him, you know, relating it to past issues that he'd had and how
well,
much
they can't
it means.
Catch.
Yeah, and I mean that was sort of secondary wide last season. It seemed like things would just go off the fingertips, but and the safeties like to hit, so moving them up closer, Cotton Moya, and you know we've seen Floyd get in there too. You know they like to mix it up at the line of scrimmage as well as help out in coverage. So I like what does Tommy Burch say? I smell what you guys are cooking. I like the aroma.
He stole that from The Rock. If Tommy Burch is trying to claim that, then Burch is a liar.
We're all, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Cotton Moya might be my favorite player on the team. I love watching him play.
Wow.
No, yeah. I mean, how do you not love watching that young man play?
I love watching him. I love watching him.
I mean, he can lay the wood. He's a smart player. I mean, I just love everything about him.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite Cyclone to watch right now? Rob, and then we'll go to Adam.
Favorite
Cyclone to watch play. So if you just watch one guy on the field.
Does it have to be just for sheer enjoyment?
Yeah, just for
playing?
Fun. Mine would be Jarvis West, but they don't ever give him the damn ball, so I can't say that anymore.
Well, he's been banged up.
They don't do anything with him anyways.
That's true.
Have a great game against Kansas State. Let's quit giving the guy the ball.
Yeah, what happened to those inner rounds that were working?
Don't worry about it.
But you said
it worked too well. Let's quit.
You said Cotton Moya was your favorite, and then you switched to Jarvis.
Like, well, Jarvis normally would be. I love Jarvis West, but they don't give him the ball anymore, so I don't care anymore.
Gotcha.
Well, I'm done with the offense. Until they do something, I'm done with them.
I like Tribune. I like watching the way he plays.
That's a great choice.
He's going to take some chances, and sometimes, you know, any good corner is going to get beat sometimes. It's how they respond after getting beat.
Yeah.
He's starting to get his hands on balls. I think it's a matter of time. Rhodes was talking about it last season, turning some of those passes defended to interceptions and then pick sixes. He was pretty much on the edge of turning that one into a pick six at Okie State.
The boy's got NFL written all over him.
Yeah.
That young
man
does. Who's your favorite Cyclone to watch?
You guys both had good picks there. Both young guys too, which is exciting. I love watching Corey Morrissey.
He's an animal.
Even if he's not in a play, he'll chase something down from the backside and make tackles where a gain could have maybe gone for 12 yards, and he'll make sure it just stops at 6-7 yards.
Mentality-wise, don't you think Mitch Myers plays a lot like him too?
He does. I mean,
I think that they've got I actually like their young D lineman. With Robbie Garcia too, I mean, he's far from a physical specimen, but he plays like that too.
He does. They said he was nasty coming into the season. He had that kind of nastiness, and you've seen it. And Trent Taylor's been a pleasant surprise as well. He's done some good things. The line has been a very pleasant surprise at this point. It's not great, but it's been a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Absolutely. No, Whitford and I talked about after the game on Saturday. We basically set ground rules on Cyclone Reaction, no ripping the defense today. If you rip the defense today, you're gone. Like, we're cutting your call. It's over.
No, that was a tremendous performance by the defense, and I mean, the line stands out to me too because of all the question marks. You had the Irving, the Coe stuff, you know. At the time, Brandon Jensen was not back, and he's been a solid guy.
I'm so tired though. And here's the thing: I fully understand, like my criticism there of the usage of Jarvis West. He had a concussion. I think that he was still rattled by that in the Baylor game, and then he goes out against Oklahoma State. So, I mean, that call that an excuse, but it's also a reason why he's not getting the ball. I get it.
Sure.
And so how many other wide receivers are they down? I mean, they're down like four guys when Jarvis is out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They are at the point now where, you know, it's looking a lot like last year in the sense that they're just so depleted, and it's hard to get a good gauge on where that offense would be if they're somewhat healthy. But it's just so maddening. It's the same thing. And I get, like, they got their new system, and they got to figure it out. And I told you, Rob, before we started recording, at some point, I guarantee you this year, this offense will click, and they'll score a lot of points. But here's the deal. If you go anything by the last few years, by that point, the defense is going to be so damn worn down because they've been on the field so much. This is the same thing. I mean, we're watching the exact same thing play out this season. And Wally Burnham has just got to be so frustrated because – I mean, his group is overachieving times two, I would say, at this point in the year. And you know, what do you get? You force a turnover at Oklahoma State. Oh, kick a field goal. What do you get? You force a turnover. Oh, turn a three and out. Yep. You know what I mean? It's just maddening to me. And I'm not blaming Mark Mangino. He's a football coach, not a miracle worker. I give Jack Whitford credit for that quote.
Yeah.
But at some point, like, you got to give the defense something. And I don't like pointing fingers and saying it's that guy's fault, it's his fault, it's that unit, whatever. I mean, you win and lose as a team, but at the same time, like, it just – this keeps happening over and over again.
Well, that response has to happen now.
Yes. I mean,
Toledo's susceptible, yes, particularly with the passing game. You know, those overthrows, you make those connections with Daly, Lazard down the field, Bibbs getting more involved. I mean, Toledo's known they can stop the run, but it might be because they can't stop the pass. I mean, the mix of plays you're going to face and all that. I mean, if it's going to happen, it happens. I mean, think about it. At 6 o'clock on Saturday, half the season is over. And, I mean, last season, you waited until the very end. And then you had the offense explosions against Kansas and West Virginia, two struggling teams, obviously. It finally happened late in the year. Obviously, wasn't enough to keep that staff intact. But, you know, halfway through, you know, you've seen more flashes maybe than you saw last season.
Absolutely.
But not enough put together. And this it's got to come now.
And if it does, there are opportunities in the very near future. I mean, if it comes together just a little bit and the defense doesn't regress, I mean, I don't think they win at Texas at this point because I don't know how Iowa State's offense scores on Texas. That's
good point.
It's going to be really tough.
Yep.
Unless we see a huge jump by the offense, which, I mean, I'm not gonna put any of my money on that happening at this point. But those last four games are all winnable football games. Maybe not West Virginia anymore. As I said on their earlier podcast this week, I need to see more from them before I'm completely – and frankly, at TCU now looks unwinnable, I would say, for Iowa State too. But you're right. I mean, if they don't do anything this week
– When's
hoops start?
Yeah. That would be the mentality if they lost this week. And, you know, I think it sets up a little different than last year in the regards that the bye week sets up pretty good again.
Correct, yeah.
You get Toledo. Hopefully, like Rob said here, you get some confidence going with the offense. Things start clicking. And you go down to Texas, which I think we all agree, Texas might be the best defense we'll face this year.
Perhaps.
They really could be. It's a great defense.
I think, too, though, and I'm not doing it just – Baylor's defense was really good.
Yep, Baylor's defense
is good. And TCU's is pretty good, too. So I think in the Big 12 this year, you actually have better defenses than I think we're all used to seeing.
And Oklahoma State's is pretty solid as well.
Yeah, it's not like Oklahoma's anything
K-State.
To sneeze at.
Yeah,
look at K-State, how they – corralled Auburn pretty well.
Yeah.
And you put up 28 points. And then maybe that was the best offensive effort. I know Coach Rhodes said the Iowa game was probably in terms of clutch plays. But when they went on that 28-point spree over about 16 minutes of the game, I know one was special teams with Jarvis, but that was as impressive as this offense has looked by wide margin, I think, in this season.
In a decade, it seems like. And since the Iowa State-Texas A&M game down there when Blythe caught three or four touchdowns, that was about the last – good solid half of offensive football, it seems like, where we really got things going. But I mean, you get Toledo here, you get a little confidence, you go down to Texas where
that's not a crazy thing to think they could win that game.
No, because Texas's offense is so bad and so depleted. I mean, as depleted as we are, they're more depleted, and they're depleted on the line too.
Yep.
And you go down there, and the offense doesn't – I don't think they have to go down there and score 30 points. They score 17-20, and they could win that football game down there. And then you get a bye week. And I think that sets up – when you got a new staff with Mangino and you got a lot of young players playing on the offense, I think it sets up for them to have a good last four or five games. Where last year at this time, we're looking at it just saying, we just got to get out of this year because there's no hope. I still see hope there. I still think this is a 4-win football team. And I think there's things that can five maybe.
I don't think you're crazy there. I don't think – and we haven't brought this up yet. I wrote about it on Monday. That was the negative portion of the conversation. Let's get positive now. The combined record of teams Iowa State has played needs to be brought up at some point in time.
Yes.
You know, there's of the Big 12 teams they've played, those teams have two losses combined to Florida State and Auburn, who I think at this point, season ends, they're in the college football playoff, correct?
Yeah. They're ranked 1 and 2, aren't they?
Just depends on where you're looking. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it really is downhill from here.
Yeah.
But this was my fear the whole time. I think this was everybody's fear in the offseason. When you get to the point where you have some winnable football games, because listen, in July, Iowa State wasn't beating Baylor. Mm-hmm. Iowa State was not beating Oklahoma State. Iowa State should have beaten North Dakota State in our minds, yep. and they probably should have lost Iowa. So realistically, they're about even.
Yep.
As I don't think most people thought them beating Kansas State was going to happen.
Randy Peterson picked them to beat Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm just saying there were people at the beginning of the year that picked Iowa State.
But I'm the homer.
And I know a lot of people that before the season thought, hey, this year we're going to get Kansas State. And quite frankly, we should have beat Kansas State.
We should have.
Absolutely.
I get it. No, But
Randy, how many people honestly said they thought that the Cyclones would be 3-2 at this point in the season?
Nobody.
I mean,
and that's not even a shot at Randy, because Randy's point when he picked that was very valid. With all the guys they were replacing on defense, I remember sitting in Dallas, Randy and I did a video. I completely agree with him on that. But Oklahoma State's better than I think most people thought they were going to be. They are for me, at least.
Yeah.
I thought that was maybe a 7-5 team this year. I don't see that now. That defense. They're a lot like Iowa State defensively, I think, except they're just better athletes across the board. They have better players, but they're still very raw in Oklahoma State. So I don't blame Randy for bringing that up in his preseason. But I agree with you, Rob. Like, realistically, like a realistic human being objectively looking at this, nobody at Iowa State at 3-2 at this point.
No, and probably not even 2-3. I mean, if you're away from the program, you're not looking at it on paper and saying, oh, maybe they get Kansas State. You're not looking at it and saying – you're saying they're going to get North Dakota State.
Because Kansas State was a perennial top 20 team coming into the season.
Yeah.
Iowa State was 3-9 a year ago.
And Iowa on the road.
And replacing all those defensive players.
Yeah.
You're on the road at Iowa. Nobody was going to pick that. And North Dakota State was the one.
Yep.
So, you know, if you look at it through those goggles – they're where they should be, but the point is, it's like, where are they at, though? I mean, where are they at mentally right now? And this is the key to the rest of the season. That's what makes Toledo so important. You go out there and put a 3-touchdown whooping on the Rockets. Now we're talking, baby. Now we're talking. Now we're talking at Adam's scenario where you can get the 5 wins.
Yep.
You go out there, and I'm not even going to say lose. God forbid they lose. If they lose, I'm quitting Cyclone Reaction the second that game ends. But if...
I would not say
short,
that.
That's the ultimate short notice.
Let's say they even win by a point, though. What does that do for you? Does that give you confidence because you won, or does that just piss the fans off even more?
I don't know how any Iowa State fan can be pissed with any kind of win right now. I mean,
you're fairly rational dude saying that.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this board and I'm like, hey man, there's gonna be some ticked off hombres if Iowa State doesn't convincingly win on Saturday, I think.
I think it would depend on how they did it. Let's say they went up 3 touchdowns and then they end up winning by a point. I think that would cause a lot more angst for people than, say, the offense has an explosion. They scored 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter and pull out a game 40-37 or something. Because then they see hope in that offense that carries over through the bye and or to Texas and the winnable games that possibly loom.
And another point, too, like you said, if Iowa State goes and scores 40 points, they win 40-37, people could say, well, the offense got going.
Yep.
But if we win 17-14, I don't think – I mean, I think people are going to look at it and be like, how are we going to score against Texas? How are we going to score against Oklahoma, TCU? So I think a big thing more than anything is you got to see this offense get going. It's time for the younger guys to just step up a little bit and make some plays out there.
Mr. B Clothing Podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com, 1995 Northwest 86th Street in gorgeous Clive, Iowa. Rob, you and Jared do a great job on Tuesday nights of going up there and you meet with the coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
What's your read on Mark Mangino right now? Because I haven't talked to Mark. I'm not up there on Tuesdays anymore. Thanks to you for that. But are you sensing a level of frustration? Do you think, because I just watched the interviews, he seems fairly like the same guy he was in fall camp to me. Do you think he – because I remember Bloom telling me – Bloom gets to listen to the Cyclone Radio Network deals before they are broadcast. And Bloom told me before the Baylor game, he's like, man, Gino sounds really confident. Are you sensing that? Like, that was just Bloom's take on one interview. But what are you getting from him?
No, I'm getting that from him every single time.
You think he's still confident?
I think he is.
That's good to hear.
I think he's able to identify on film every single time what's gone wrong. I mean – we hadn't seen as many drops until this past game, and that was somewhat. But, you know, Jawan Wesley, I mean, a new guy. He was on the scout team. Boom, you're going out there. And
catch the ball. You're a wide receiver.
True. But, I mean, they've had these issues.
It's like kickers. Make your kick.
Everyone.
Come on.
Everyone.
Yes. I'll give you 3 misses a year. That's it.
From 53 plus. But he comes out. He's very loose. I know in the past he'd had a – you know, reputation for being fairly testy with the media at times, particularly when things aren't going that well. As yeah. anybody, that's human nature, right?
Correct.
But he's been just very congenial and confident. I mean, he'll talk about what's going on. He'll talk about certain players emerging a little bit and then other guys coming up, you know, just putting together all the pieces. And they're saying it. And look, to be honest, I'm hearing a lot of the same stuff from the offense I heard last year. We're this close on this, and there's one block away here and all that. But at the same time, when you watched that last year, you said, okay, they might think that, but I'm not seeing that on the field. I think now okay, they're thinking that, and at least I'm nodding my head a little bit because I'm seeing that on the field. You know, Sam hits one of those long passes that isn't overthrown by a yard. Something changes, clicks. We saw what happened again that yeah. Kansas State game when they got rolling, got confidence. I think they've kept the players' confidence level up this season that I didn't sense that last year with the 1-9 start. It just kept going down and down and down.
I thought your interview with Sage Rosenfels was interesting last Friday when he pointed out specifically the loss of Quentin Bundridge with those long passes. Sage basically said yeah. If Quentin Bundridge is there, you think he connects on those. Or that's what Sage said, yeah. at least. So, I mean, well, I want to get your opinion on this, Adam, because I know you have a very strong opinion on the play of Sam Richardson as of late. But, like, my thing is and I asked Rhodes about this, and I need to transcribe this and get this up on the website because I think it was an interesting response. But I asked Paul, is this a deal where Sam's missing guys? Is this a deal where the receivers simply – aren't ready to be out there, and they're learning on the go? Is this you don't have a running game? Well, you know what is wrong with the passing game? And Adam, you have a very interesting opinion on this. You just want them to throw it up and let them run underneath it, right? Well, you want to go straight Randall Cunningham, Randy Moss, just chuck it up there.
No.
Jeff George, Vikings, Chris Carter,
Steel Jans, Darius Reynolds. I had to work
Steel
a Jans, Steel reference.
There you go. Yeah. We love Steel here.
No, I actually don't at all. You take what the defense gives you. And yeah. that's why I liked actually Iowa State, and I like Sam coming into that Iowa game because yeah. Iowa runs that very base defense. They're going to give up stuff underneath, which Sam's very good at. He's good at, you know, yeah. you get the crossing routes. He can play that game. I thought he would struggle against Baylor and Oklahoma State because I knew they played close to the line, and they mm-hmm. would force him to beat
him. It's a good read on your part. Yeah.
And he, quite frankly, he has not shown that he can do that yet at this point of his career. It's frustrating to me because we're going out and recruiting these bigger wide receivers than we've seen in the past. I mean, we've got mm-hmm. 2'6", 5" physical guys on the team, and I feel like we're not taking advantage of that at times when they're press covering us.
My whole thing, though, and I completely agree with that, but everything I hear is that, like, when they're going back and watching film, like Montgomery, for instance, yeah. I mean, he's just never in the right spot. He's never blocking the right guy. Like, that's the reason he's not out there.
No, and I see that for a certain extent, but there's also times where you put him out there and you say, Montgomery, go deep.
Yeah.
Just go.
Yeah.
I mean, just do it. And
they tried that against Baylor, and that's where I think Sam missed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even against Oklahoma State, they threw him a fade in the end zone.
Yeah.
And it's just got to be a little bit better throw. You got to give those guys chances to make plays.
Put some air under it. Yeah.
Put some air under or keep the ball in play. So even if they do catch it, it's inbounds. As far as Bundridge being out and that hurting him on the deep passes, I think there's a little something to that. But Dondre Daly's been in the program for 3 years, and he missed him twice wide open in that Baylor game. So
yeah, I agree.
The timing should be there with Daly. It should be there with Montgomery. I mean, shoot, he's played with Montgomery since he was, a freshman in high school.
That's the one that I don't understand, yeah.
It should be there. So, you know, like I was
saying. What about Tad Ekby? Whatever happened to that guy?
He's been out there. It's just been hard for him to make a play. I largely agree with Adam, but I think the Bundridge thing, like Sage had referenced, is a huge deal. Daly can run around, and we've seen his route running improve greatly. And we knew he had some speed and mm-hmm. elusiveness, but he is consistently getting behind people like Bundridge did. But sometimes that connection, when it's the one guy, hey, he's the guy I hit for touchdowns, or Grant did at times last year too.
Daly's not.
There's something
Bundridge.
About that, yeah, and there's something about that guy that when Bundridge is on and. He's a special player. You know,
he's as good as you'll see in the conference.
He's an NFL prospect.
He's very good. Yeah. I mean, no, there's no question that hurts, and Jarvis West being out there hurts quite a bit too. But
those are by far your two best receivers.
You got a guy named Bibbs on the team who.
Well, actual wide receivers.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's still enough guys there right now that he can take advantage of, and I think we can make teams pay.
I think so too. I mean, we haven't brought up Alan Lazard.
Yeah, we haven't brought up Lazard. And even I know Wesley had the drops. He had 3 drops. But the kid got open.
He's going to be good.
He got open.
He's going to be a nice player. I remember them telling me on signing day last year at our party, I think it was Tommy Mangino telling me, watch out for this kid.
Yeah.
Like he even alluded to it. Like he's good enough. He could play as a true freshman. So it's not like Wesley came out of nowhere. That was a desperation deal because of all the injuries. But he was a guy who I know they had on their radar coming in as a true freshman who potentially could sneak into the lineup.
And you know they think a lot of him when he gets open, when in his very first game, they threw to him, six times?
Yeah.
Three of them, but I mean you don't throw to a guy six times unless he's getting open. So I think he's doing a lot of right things, and I saw him even blocking out there, doing a pretty good job blocking. So there's weapons there. They just got to find a way to make those pieces work. And I agree with what Rob said earlier. Last year, you'd look at the offense and you'd say there's no hope for this offense. I mean, they just everything looked like quite a bit of struggle. And even last week when it was a struggle to score, I'm one of those weird guys. I'll go back and watch the game. There are plays to be made out there. There really are. And I think it's one of those things that's just going to take a little bit more time than us fans want with me and Gino coming in here. But at some point, it's going to click. And hopefully when it clicks, they can just keep that momentum going through the rest of the year.
Here's another positive. They actually ran the football against Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to take one positive from the offensive, two positives, E.J. Bibbs finally was involved.
Yep.
Which was huge. I still don't understand why he wasn't in the red zone a couple possessions, but whatever.
Yeah.
We won't beat a dead horse.
But
they did run the ball. I mean, that one drive that they sustained against, it was like a 7-minute drive, I think, it was in the first half. I mean, they were getting four yards a carry.
Yeah.
Which was encouraging. I like to think that they parlay that, like we're talking about, Toledo coming up. I'd like to think they could parlay that into, I mean, how big would it be for the confidence of this football team to run for 200 yards even? I mean, it's not a huge statistic, but just to run for 200 yards at home, that'd be huge.
Absolutely.
Huge.
I noticed the same thing, too, that particularly as the game wore on, that Wimberly or Neely were going to break off 4 or 5 yard runs, even though early in the game it looked like the same 1-2 yards and then, second and long, third and long. So, if any part of the offense can break out, even if it's a single player, maybe Wimberly breaks one because the hole's big enough and he can use that one cut speed and boom, he's gone for 82 yards, or Lazard has 160 yards receiving, or Bibbs continues to. The thing I don't understand with Bibbs is I've heard different things, and it seems to my naked eye he was being used a lot in the running game, blocking. That's one of the reasons. I know Rhodes talked about him being bracketed and really covered up by multiple guys at times. But when that happens, I wasn't noticing a single guy running free. And that should happen, right?
If
he's constantly getting doubled or having that much attention.
Which, that's a deal, too, where you kind of just think, there's no way Mangino's not picking up on that.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean?
Yep.
That'll started to get worked out on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Just, even Bibbs is so good, even if he is getting double cover, you'd think he'd have more than, 4 targets in a game.
Yeah.
Like he had been.
Well, and Bibbs, he almost is like those tall wide receivers. Sometimes when they're not open, they're still open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got to throw the ball early to him.
Give him a chance.
Give him a chance, and you see he's got fantastic hands. I mean, I can't remember him dropping a ball in his Iowa State career. And some of his, I mean, the touchdown catch he had was one of all time great.
You know, at what point?
Catches. Well covered too.
I mean, it was great.
One that's an example of just throw it to him.
Yeah.
He's going to get it.
He uses. I mean, he's not a tall tight end, but he's a big body tight end, and he does a good job of using that body to kind of shield off defenders and making those catches.
At what point do you consider just putting Ben Bosin in at tight end and moving Bibbs all around the field?
That's
play him at wide receiver. I heard Arnaud talking the other day.
Why?
Put him in at like a fullback. Just move him around. Just give him different looks.
No, I like that idea. I don't know why you necessarily need to bring Bosin in. Are you saying Bosin just as an extra blocker then? Or are you?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's
let him play the tight end and use Bibbs as your Jarvis West type player for now while Jarvis is out. I'm just an idea.
I agree. Put him out wide.
They don't have any playmakers on offense. Iowa State doesn't. It's very rare for Iowa State. They don't like proven ones. Sure, there are guys who's he's got a lot of potential. I'm talking guys we've actually seen it in Big 12 football. You got a couple.
Yeah.
One of them's on the sideline with a torn ACL.
Mm-hmm.
The other one gets hurt in about every single game that he plays in.
And we're forgetting a big one who was doing a great job, P.J. Harris. P.J. Harris, before he got hurt, was getting open consistently.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call him like a playmaker, though, like a game breaker. I have never seen that from P.J. Harris.
He's just a first down maker. He's, Chris Carter, all he does is catch touchdowns. All P.J. Harris does is catch
touchdowns.
And I'm
fine with that. You need guys like that. But I'm talking guys who can change a game.
Okay.
And we haven't – I mean, other than West and Bundridge, I think Wimberly has always had the potential – to be that guy. And I think Neely has the potential too, but I'm not, based off what I've seen this year, I'm not going to not going to put them in that category. So you got Bibbs right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, get him the ball. Find a way. Do something.
Yeah.
Get him the ball. And if Jarvis is healthy, you got to do the same thing with him. I mean, because I just don't like – I'm not going to go all out there saying that Dondre Daly's this guy because I haven't consistently seen it from him yet. I'm not saying he won't be over time. I actually think Dondre Daly's a nice-looking one.
I like Dondre Daly.
Always liked Dondre Daly. He was another one of those guys. He stepped on campus the first time, and they're like, wow, we got a good one here. I remember that class. It was him and Charles Rogers. Mm-hmm. And he gone.
Dondre Daly against Baylor could have had four touchdowns that game. Yeah, he could have had three or four others. Yeah. He was getting open.
Bibbs, to your point, in those games where he wasn't targeted, maybe we could call up Kirk Holland. Maybe there's a hotline or something.
The encyclopedia hotline.
Yes, yeah. That in games in which he's been targeted at least six times, seven times, maybe there's a magic number. Has he produced every one of those games? I mean, obviously the pass has got to be there, but it seems like if he's targeted enough, he's going to make one of those plays, whether he's covered or not.
Is it like
the there's going to be a couple more.
Like the old Randy ratio with the Vikings?
Yeah,
The EJ Bibbs ratio? I think that the Vikings are the same way with that, with like Cordarrelle Patterson, though. Like the fact that that guy, who's a proven game breaker, is getting like three targets a game. That's insane.
It is.
But, you know, it's easier said than done. That's why I'm sitting here publishing a blog website that nobody reads. And those guys are.
That's not true. All
right. Plenty of people read it, but it's still just a hack blog
website. They just don't like it when they read it.
Yeah.
That's why I'm so proud to be part of it.
Yeah. Really glad you came on board and you left your prestigious job with the Cedar Rapids Gazette to come and hang out with us here on a Wednesday morning. Let's move on. Got to wrap up the Mr. B Clothing podcast here momentarily. So next week I'm going out to Kansas City, gentlemen, for the Big 12 basketball media days. In dumb luck, the friggin' Royals are playing in the ALCS that night in Kansas City.
Got to go.
Well, you know, that's a high demand dollar ticket right there.
You're going to have a deadline then for yourself, you know, because you're going to have to get your stuff done and posted. So you can get there and scalp a, you know, buy a ticket from a scalper.
No, it's there. It's the night before.
Oh, so night before. And from my recollection, Big 12 Media Day starts at what, 5:30 a.m.?
8 a.m., man.
I'm a master of exaggeration.
I remember one year I drove down there that morning. I got up at like 3:30 and jetted from Bondurant, Iowa. Oh, it was horrible. But so I'm in this like moral predicament right now because I'm like, you know what, I don't really want to spend – $300 on a ticket. There's no way I'll do that. There's absolutely no way I'll do that. But it'd be kind of cool to watch it in Power and Light, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, and you never know. I mean, if you hang around the stadium and I know it's not exactly like a walking, you know, around Kauffman. But nonetheless, if you hang around, there are going to be people that want to go into that game. And they're going to say like, give me face value. Here you go. Because they want to see the game, most of them anyway. I can't imagine they're going to sit out there holding out for an extra – $50 and say, I'm just not going to watch the game then because I'm really PO'd.
I kind of feel, because I'm a lifelong Royals fan. Now, the Braves are my team, but I think a lot of people can say this. I've always felt like if separate leagues, you're fine. Grew up in Southwest Iowa where Kansas City's an hour and a half. Dad took me to watch the Royals all the time. I grew up listening to Denny Matthews. I was a Braves TBS generation guy. That's what got me hooked on Atlanta. I was a bit of a front runner when I was 10 years old. I apologize, but I've stuck with them. But I do love the Royals. And I mean, I'll never forget going over to my grandma's house and we fell asleep listening to the Royals games, like the West Coast games and Denny Matthews. Yeah. And so like, I kind of feel like if they're in the ALCS and I'm in Kansas City, it'd be kind of stupid not to go to the ball game.
I completely agree.
So you think I need to just, no matter what, go to the game.
Empty out the 401k, buddy, and get going.
I don't think my 401k has enough money to pay for the ticket. That's kind of sad. No, but so Big 12 Hoops Media Day coming up next week. That'll be interesting. Rob, you got anything on basketball? Any? You're working on a Monte Morris piece, right? What are you working on?
Yeah, just his expanded role, obviously. He continued to show that he can – he had a clutch shot at times last year. It wasn't just the
he was a much
five.
Better shooter than we all thought he would be.
It wasn't even the NCAA record assist turnover ratio was one thing, and that was extremely impressive, obviously. But the ability to hit a big shot, the ability to get to the basket, he's a little bit bigger. Now, he actually – was I talking to you? He actually looks almost visibly a little bit taller. I don't know who I was talking to somebody else.
Sorry, I was texting somebody.
But, yeah, so we're going to work on something about how his role can even expand in offense, not just as a playmaker as a point guard, but as a playmaker, as a guy who can go and get you a basket when you need to. And obviously some more football stuff this week, the defense forcing more turnovers. How often is that translated into points?
Yeah.
Not as often as it should, obviously.
Did you see Kirk Collins' stats on the end of the halves today?
Yeah, that's depressing stuff.
I asked him for that after we botched that kickoff.
Did you really?
I tweeted him and said, I need stats on this. And because Kirk delivered.
I got a PM from a fanatic wanting the same thing.
Really?
And I emailed it to Kirk. Yeah. The man, Kirk Holland is a pleaser. He's
takes
a crowd
requests.
Pleaser. Yeah.
I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I thought the stats would be worse than that. I thought the points per possession would be minus 800. How bad it seems.
Because the thing is, the badness stands out in our minds. Remember the ones that, yeah. You know, are.
Hail Mary against Texas.
The Texas game is the worst.
Well, think about our end of the halves this year. So North Dakota State scores 17 unanswered against us at the end of the half, right?
Yep.
Kansas State, the whatever call you want to say at the end of the half. Iowa, Neely fumbles going into the half, so we don't even get points we should have gotten there. Obviously, what happened this last week, I think Baylor scored 85 points in the second. See, I'm over-exaggerating now too, Rob. You're kind of wearing on me.
It's
here,
fun, though, isn't it?
It is. So end of the halves are just this year alone have been just a nightmare for Iowa State. And you can really go back through the history of Iowa State, and it seems like over and over and over again, teams get just momentum-killing scores right before the half. And Iowa State right now is not a good enough team to overcome that.
That Texas game from last year has been brought up way too much this week. Part of me dies every time I hear that game brought up.
I said it after that game, and I still say it's the most infuriating loss of my Iowa State career. It wasn't even good.
You know what, though? And that's what the thing, like, with the people killing Pollard for his post-game comments, whatever, like on the conspiracy thing. I don't think there's a conspiracy theory against Iowa State. I said that since Saturday. Take that aside. The point he made about jobs are on the line. Coaches, athletic directors, I'm not sure about presidents, but whatever. Think about how different Paul Rhodes' life is. If Jeremiah George makes that play.
He did make that play.
Yeah. Okay. But if they give him credit for that play.
Okay.
And I always say, how miraculous of a play is that? I mean, that's one of the most memorable plays in Iowa State, maybe Big 12 history. Just the way that goes down. Two, what happens after that? Do they beat Texas Tech the next week? Does that throttle them into more wins? The offseason. I mean, Rhodes was getting it from all angles with 3-9. You're at least 4-8. You beat Texas at home. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I don't think people are jumping for joy coming into this season because you're still 4-8, 5-7 at best. You're not going to a bowl game last year, regardless, in my opinion. But that's a big win for Paul Rhodes last year if he can get that. But anyway, we don't know how that would have impacted anything, in all honesty, but I do know the morale of that team last year, being around it, how devastating that loss was. And it absolutely, you can attest to that too, Rob, I'm sure.
No doubt about that, and that's why, you know, the confidence and momentum are sort of go hand in hand, and if you can get a win in mid a season like that where you go on the long losing streak after the Tulsa win, you know, what the shot, it's hard to, you know, fathom how much that would have meant. Now, maybe they don't win any more than they did. Maybe they lose one of the games they ended up winning, like at West Virginia where they went down. But, you know, you don't know. But generally, I think people know from experience that if you get a shot in the arm at a needed time, it leads to better success down the road and feeds confidence, which leads to better results.
This is fun today, guys.
Yeah, this was fun.
I think
we didn't even agree. It's the power of the G.
Well,
the gray.
I think it's a nice mix. I think this is a nice mix, the gray squared plus a Williams.
Absolutely.
If we could just get rid of the Williams, this would be a great podcast.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'll gladly take Wednesdays off, and y'all can come in here and record and post and do it all yourselves.
As you know, I'm an old man. I'd break that thing trying to get it to work, that
this is
newfangled contraption.
Fancy schmancy equipment. We haven't even used our cool camera over there yet. That's coming, though. Gray, when are we going to get the faster internet in this joint?
I got an email 3 days ago saying that it is ready for them to come out here and set it up.
All right,
so it'll probably be another six months.
I am not going to name names, but whoever we're getting internet through here, it's a disgrace. I'm not going to name names, but it is a disgrace, the service we've gotten.
Strong,
I'll leave it at that.
Strong take.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
You might get fined for that those strong comments.
Wanting some internet.
At least a reprimand.
It's taken them, like 60 days, something like that?
Yeah, they told me when it set up that it was, I think, like 7 weeks out. And I said, well, can we speed up the process? I said, sure, if you want to pay an extra $2,000. I said, no, we're good.
Unbelievable.
We're good.
Because the thing is, Rob, we have this camera. We wanted to do some, like, streaming with it or post, like, video of these conversations on YouTube and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And our internet is simply not fast enough at this. We don't have big enough of a pipe. You know how the internet works.
Oh, yeah. Bandwidth. It's all about bandwidth.
Video, man, it takes a lot of juice.
Well, you know, we're in Ankeny, so Ankeny's not quite up to the Johnston standard, so they can't get as fast to internet.
It's funny that I can get it in Bondurant, but we can't here in Ankeny.
You know.
It's unbelievable.
Rob, you get pretty fast internet, I'm sure, living where you live.
Reasonably fast. It's going to be really fast when I move to Ankeny, though.
Oh, you're moving to Ankeny?
Yeah.
Oh, then my comment isn't as good.
Adam,
fiber. I'm going to have fiber.
Okay. Out there.
Fiber's good. How many seats do we have left on this bus trip for Kansas?
We have a full bus to fill. So we got 52. Well, we'll fill it, Chris. Don't worry about that.
All right.
I just sent out an email blast to all our people that have gone on past trips. We've had 290 people go on past trips with us.
Are you annoying these people with emails?
I hope not.
Oh, okay.
No, I hope not. I even gave them the option to opt out of these future emails. And so far, I'm looking at it, zero people have chosen that route. So
good for them.
Yeah, hopefully.
We appreciate that.
I sent 2 emails a year, so hopefully it's nothing too
You'd have
intrusive.
To be kind of a jerk to just be like, yeah. I don't want your emails, Gray.
No, I know. You actually do that to me every now and then when I send these emails to you. You pretty much reply back, great, just don't bother me. I'm too busy right now.
No, that's not what I say. It's your job. Like you want my input on it. I don't care. Do whatever you want, man.
No, we got one bus full, and so we're still looking to fill a bus. And like I tell everyone, it's down and back in a day. It's $95. It gets you the trip down there. It gets you a ticket into the game. We went down 2 years ago, watched Sam Richardson have his best game as a Cyclone coming off the bench for Steel Giants. Had a blast, and I imagine it's going to be a fun time again this year.
We only have one rule on our trips. No browning in the bus.
Oh, is that a rule?
It is now.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't even go on these trips. You're too good. You go down early on with the media.
Me and Bloom.
Media guys,
me and
Bloom
go down there, and we see, but that's the thing, though, because on road games, Bloom wants help setting up.
Yeah.
And we've got to be there so darned early. Like, trust me, you all don't want me in Bloom with you because you'd have to leave like 3 hours earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a good thing.
If it's an 11 o'clock kickoff, you guys are probably going to go down Friday night then?
We always go down Friday night.
Regardless.
Yeah. Even if it's like a night game, Bloom will want to be there by like noon. I mean, we could in theory. But you got to realize that the entire Cyclone Radio Network broadcast hinges on this.
Yeah.
So let's say it's a 2:30 kick in Lawrence and we leave that day and we have car trouble. What you going to do, brother? What you going to do? Because they don't – that's – Bloom is everything on those broadcasts. Like, it would be fascinating for, like, Cyclones TV or something to document, like, everything he does to get that thing set up. It's unbelievable.
Maybe that could be a 30 for 30.
It should be. Thanks, Rob.
Hey, thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Adam.
And pleasure, Adam.
Yeah.
Cyclone Fanatic Radio Show presented by Nebraska Furniture Martin Clive coming up tomorrow, 1460 KXNO from 6 to 7. Bloom. In light of the recent officiating controversy, Bloom is elected to skip tomorrow night's show. So it'll just be Jeff Woody and I from Benchwarmers in Ankeny. So long, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.